This is the Michael K. Show.
Duke alum, former NBA GM as well, Billy King. What are you feeling going into tomorrow between the Duke North Carolina aspect and the potential for it to be Coach K's last game? What are your emotions about tomorrow generally?
Well, I just came back from the open practice with my son, and you know, Carolina was just finishing up, and I saw Duke practice. And so the last game, it's been like it could have been the last game for a while, but it's about trying to win a championship. It's not as much about trying to beat Carolina. Well, I like to see Coach K go out with the championship, so I'm just hoping the guys continue to play like they've played.
The Michael K. Show.
This will go on. It's like the Hatfields and McCoys. It's never going to end.
On 98.7 ESPN.
And guys, Back on the Record with Bob Costas continues its second season with an all-new episode tonight at 11 on HBO, and you can stream it on HBO Max. Tonight's episode, Bob has the great Max Scherzer. And
what a time to have him, too, right?
Exactly. And the iconic Billy Crystal, plus a roundtable with J.J. Redick, David Sampson, Candace Bucker, and Bomani Jones. Last season was great. Excited about this one. And Bob, first of all, thank you for joining us. I know Don's going to want to get into it with you about the Mets, but I got to start. We were just talking about Duke, North Carolina. You're such a sports historian. What are your feelings going into tomorrow night?
Oh, this is tremendous. It's two great legacy programs. In fact, all four teams, Villanova, especially because of its recent history, and the Rolly Massimino team that upset Georgetown back in 85, but this is their third Final Four in the last six seasons where Final Fours were played. They didn't in 2020, and they won the last two times they were in it. So you got to put Villanova nearly at the same level as Kansas, North Carolina, and Duke, who have long, long histories at this level of college basketball. And then you've got the fact that Coach K is going to coach one more game or two. It's either his last one on Monday night or it's his last one tomorrow. And the fact that it isn't just this Tobacco Road rivalry that goes back forever, but the fact that North Carolina spoiled his last home game, the final game of the regular season. There's so many subplots there, and that's part of the discussion tonight. The program was taped earlier. Bomani Jones, in his first show on HBO, that Game Theory show, and you know, whether you agree with him or disagree with him, Bomani is a serious television presence. He's provocative, he's very smart, and he's unafraid. And he did this half-serious, half-tongue-in-cheek takedown of Coach K's legacy. So naturally, I invited J.J. Redick, who played for K and was the college player of the year before he played a decade and a half in the NBA, invited him to be on, and they have a very spirited exchange. And then David Sampson, who used to run the Marlins, jumps in because he's not confined to baseball, and it gets pretty heated between Bomani and Sampson on the whole topic of race and basketball and the Celtics and the Lakers in the 80s and Red Auerbach and Krzyzewski and Wooden and the whole thing. So there you go.
Yeah, that's what's so intriguing about this matchup is that nobody is on the fence about Duke. You either love Duke or you hate Duke, and people will hate watch and root against him, and that means viewers. And I'm thinking, Bob, considering the numbers you saw for St. Peter's run, that this this could do a number. I know it's on TBS as opposed to CBS, but I don't know how much that'll affect the number cable to over the air. But this might rival, you know, wild card weekend in the NFL, these numbers.
Yeah, it's going to get a substantial number. I don't know if it'll match up wild card weekend. And the fact that it is on TBS, no disrespect to them at all. They'll do a fine job, but fewer people have access to it. And the casual fan is going to say, wait a minute, I'm putting on Channel 2 if they're here in New York. Where's Jim Nantz? I don't understand what's going on here. You know, so that's going to cost them some viewership. But this is as marquee as it gets these days, especially for a semifinal game.
Bob, the timing couldn't be better to have Max Scherzer on, maybe only trumped by having Jacob deGrom on, but I'm sure you heard the news. It looks like he's out minimum, I would think, 6 to 8 weeks with this injury. And, you know, being someone that is a baseball historian too, have you been able to figure out why pitchers are so much more fragile? I mean, I was looking up Walter Johnson's numbers, and he had three straight years of
play. I was watching you guys. I saw that earlier, yeah.
Yeah, it was so. And listen, that's ridiculous because I'm sure Walter Johnson was pitching through pain, and it was a different era. But even growing up in the 80s and the 90s, why is it that pitchers are so fragile? Why is it that they break down the way that they do almost on a consistent basis?
Well, I think part of it has to do, and this is not an original theory, with the idea of max effort on almost every pitch, not for every pitcher, but for a large number of them, which puts an unnatural strain on the body and especially on the pitching mechanics. But also, a lot of pitchers, even the very best of them, are not conditioned to go deep into games. And when they pass that 100 pitch or whatever their threshold is, there's something about it. They haven't conditioned themselves. If you go to the old school guys, they'll say they don't play enough long toss and they don't pitch enough, throw enough between innings. And then there's the idea of pitching versus throwing. I remember Tom Seaver saying to me once, it was later in his career, he said, I can still throw 95. I've got about six of them in my arm per game. I'm not going to waste them on a 210 hitting shortstop with two out in the fourth inning. I'm going to save them for the right time. But a lot of pitchers now come in, starters a little bit less so than relievers. Relievers, it's max effort almost all the time for most of them. But still, it's a very high level of effort and looking to throw six innings. And those six innings may put as much strain on their arm as, Lord knows, Walter Johnson was putting on his arm for the Senators in 1909. And, you know, what Don said earlier is correct. Look, Walter Johnson was the big train. He was throwing harder than anybody else in his era. So they're thinking he threw as hard or harder than Bob Feller. And they're thinking that Bob Feller threw as hard or harder than Nolan Ryan. But there's no real way to know. Everything is relative. If he was throwing 88 and everybody else was throwing 78, it looked like 100
to
Ty Cobb or Tris Speaker or whomever. You know, so that's the way it is.
It's just really incredible to me and just so frustrating, too, because I love seeing Jacob deGrom pitch. But what I don't understand, Bob, and I brought this up earlier with Buster Olney, is that why am I taking so much pride and ego in striking out batters that don't care if they strike out? Back in the day, if you struck it when Doc Gooden as a rookie struck out 14 Giants, it mattered because every one of them went back to the dugout, ticked off they struck out. Now we got a bunch of batters that don't care.
Well, you know, generally speaking, I don't know if it's precise now, but it's pretty close. The overall strikeout per plate appearance rate in the major leagues, or per at-bat maybe it is, maybe not total plate appearances, but per official at-bat, is roughly equal to Nolan Ryan's career strikeout per hitter faced. So what Nolan Ryan did, and every time he took the mound there was anticipation and it was extraordinary, is now the cumulative rate of strikeouts in the major leagues. So nobody cares if some combination of four pitchers strikes out 16 hitters in a game. No one even takes note of that anymore. Plus, in the context that we're talking about, it's boring because it diminishes action.
Bob, we were spending a lot of time yesterday talking about another side of baseball, and that is the TV deal situation and the fact that there will be 26 games that our viewers here on YES will not be able to consume the Yankees unless they have Amazon or Apple or some other vehicle.
Or Peacock.
What are your thoughts on this overall? Is it a good thing in spreading the game to more people, or is it limiting the game?
Well, I don't know how it's spreading it to more people. Explain that part.
Well, it would be that young
people, the technological curve.
Well, I guess it would be that the idea is from some people, because younger people are on the streamers, maybe you catch some of them on Amazon, et cetera.
Well, if that were the case, then you'd put that on Amazon in addition
exactly
to the game being on YES or on WPIX or whatever the case might be. One of the problems I think baseball has, as it has become more and more a regional sport, and I'm old enough not only to remember watching the game of the week, I was lucky enough to be part of the NBC Game of the Week in the 80s, and there wasn't so much baseball on television then, and a national game could garner a huge audience, the kind of audience that would move the needle in prime time now. But baseball has taken much of its product to regional sports networks, which are very profitable, like YES and NESN and others, and then a good portion of its postseason is on FS1, or on TBS, and again, they do a fine job, but one of the advantages that the NFL has over other sports, in addition to its built-in advantages, one game a week, on the weekend, time of the year, and everything else, every game of any consequence is on network television. So that if, by some miracle, the Jaguars and the Jets became the two best teams in their respective conferences, by midpoint of that season, fans in Seattle would know the best players on those teams. They would know the head coaches of those teams from seeing highlights on all the other network games, and eventually they would be elevated to more prominent slots. And then when they got into the playoffs, every game leading up to the Super Bowl is a network game. Whereas the NBA, which was at a zenith on NBC in the 90s, where you sometimes have double and triple headers during the week on network television, surrounded by Seinfeld and ER, and the promos are on David Letterman and Johnny Carson and all the rest. Now, again, it has nothing to do with the quality of the production or the broadcasters. This is essentially a cable sport now, and much of baseball is a cable sport. So when you get to the World Series, you don't have the same following for it. Now, you may collect more money in total during the course of the season and many seasons from these various entities, but I don't know that it helps to grow fan interest overall.
We're talking to Bob Costas. Of course, his show Back on the Record with Bob Costas, second season, debuts tonight, 11 o'clock. Max Scherzer, one of his guests. Also Billy Crystal. And again, timing great after what happened with the Oscars on Sunday, Bob. And maybe it's hyperbole, but I felt what Will Smith did to Chris Rock struck a blow for stand-up comedy for the future. The stand-up comedians that we grew up with, the way society is now, how comedians don't want to go to college campuses because, you know, I'm just wondering, is what happened on Sunday the death knell for the edgy stand-up comic, and is it going to be completely different when my kids get older than what we grew up with?
Well, you know, when you think about it, even if it was a joke that fell flat, and we don't know for sure whether Chris knew that Jada Pinkett Smith suffers from alopecia or not. He should have known. But either way, that was far from the harshest joke you'll ever hear. And when you turn to like a Comedy Central roast, I mean, forget about it. That stuff's off the chart. But the difference is that the person who was roasted has agreed to be the roastee. So he or she just sits there and takes it, and everybody knows, everybody that's on the dais knows that they're going to get it from everybody in one way or another. I think that stuff will live on, and there could be a pushback after this. Like, hey, a lot of people might say, wait a second, the victim here is Chris Rock. He didn't deserve that, and he handled it with grace in a very difficult situation, and that might actually lead more people than not to say, look, the guy's just doing what comedians do, and they shouldn't fear some sort of physical retribution just for cracking a joke.
How much of a topic of conversation in the Costas household was the Will and Chris Rock thing this week?
Well, we were watching it live, and like a lot of people, for the first split second, because the angle was from directly behind Will, so you couldn't tell if it was a fake slap until you saw other angles and you saw the way Chris's head shot back. And then, of course, when Will started cursing at him and did it twice, then you knew that it wasn't some sort of setup situation. It was shocking. I know Will Smith a little bit. I've read his memoir. I've interviewed him. And like most people, I'm not claiming to know him that well, but like most people who know him, I find him to be a very genial guy who aspires to be as good a person as he can. My guess would be that in that moment, there were a number of emotional triggers, past and present, that caused him to temporarily lose his mind. That's not an excuse. It's an explanation. But the idea that, well, Chris Rock disrespected Will's wife, and there may be complexities in that relationship, which they've alluded to at various times publicly. So he supposedly disrespected Jada Pinkett Smith. Let's grant that for the sake of this argument. But then Will, whether he was conscious of it or not in that moment of insanity, Will disrespected everybody in that room, including Questlove, of course Chris Rock, but Chris Rock, it's forgotten, was there to introduce the award for Best Documentary, which Questlove produced about Summer of Love. And this is significant in this context because there's all kinds of overlapping racial dynamics. Some of them make sense, and some of them are just reflexively imposed on a situation like this. But Questlove produced this documentary about the so-called Summer of Love, which was sort of a concurrent thing in 1969 with Woodstock, but didn't get anything like the same kind of attention. But all these wonderful African-American artists, it's a beautiful documentary. Yep. Questlove comes up in the immediate aftermath of this. The crowd is still stunned, and he makes as gracious and profound an acceptance speech as you could possibly imagine. Mm-hmm. So unwittingly, Will Smith has disrespected that moment. He's obviously disrespected Chris Rock. He's disrespected the whole evening. Think of the actors and people involved in Coda. Their moment is largely forgotten.
The Williams sisters?
Wasn't Will's intention, but that's what the end result is.
Yeah, yeah. It's... First of all, it's such a great point, the Questlove part of it. I didn't even end up seeing Quest's. I consider him a friend. Never ended up even seeing his speech. That's how overshadowed the whole thing was.
So many great moments clearly were lost. We're talking to Bob Costas. And Bob, we can throw anything at you. That's why we love having you on as a guest. And when baseball went to the wild card, you didn't love it at first. I think you've grown mm-hmm. to accept it. How do you feel about the play-in in the NBA?
You know, I think the play-in in the NBA is okay. Because the regular season has never meant as much in the NBA. It's half as long. Plus, there's no tradition of anything that is comparable to winning the pennant. You get to the playoffs, there's a certain seeding. No one even remembers where the champion was ultimately seeded. And it keeps, you know, a few more teams alive with a chance, and then they have a play-in game, and you get very quickly to the number of entrants that always were in the playoffs. So I don't have a particular problem with that.
I guess the only issue would be, does it even devalue the regular season even more? Because in a year with everything the Nets have went through, they'd miss the playoffs possibly and now can have a chance to win the championship because of it.
Yeah, and with the way the NBA is these days, with a combination of injuries or trades or maneuvers that are forced by player empowerment and sometimes managing time and guys sitting out games, it's possible that a team that might have been at the cusp of the playoffs or a relatively low seed pulls itself together, is at full strength and has gelled and then blitzes their way through the playoffs. I guess that's slightly more likely now than it was previously.
Do you ever think, Bob, that you were born a generation too soon when you see these contracts that are going around for broadcasters? And we always talk about how much we love, you know, a Joe Buck, a Bob Costas, mm-hmm. a whoever. But is, in your eyes, as a broadcaster, is there ever enough justification in terms of, will a rating actually be affected, do you think, by having a great broadcaster on a football game?
I think John Madden probably moved the needle a little bit, especially during games that were blowouts and otherwise fans would have lost interest. But I think the primary reason why you hire an Al Michaels or why you get Joe Buck and Troy Aikman to move over or whatever the case may be, is for prestige. You want your main broadcast to be as well produced, as well directed, and as well broadcast as possible. You like the reviews to be good. You like your friends to tip their caps to you when you're an executive and you walk into the room. You want that aura. But nothing like this could happen, even today, in any other sport except football. Football not only reigns over all of sports as a business property, it reigns over all of American entertainment, and it isn't even close. The top 100 rated programs in television every year, 75 or 80 of them now, are NFL games. And so, in addition to that, that's why you have five platforms. Now that Amazon is involved, you've got ESPN/ABC, you've got CBS, Fox, and NBC, and now Amazon. Five platforms, all of them investing billions of dollars. So if you look at it this way, if you're going to invest billions of dollars just for the rights, then on top of it, all the production costs, spending $15 million a year on a top-level announcer is no different than if you didn't do it. It'd be like, okay, I'm buying this $3,000 suit, but I'm not going to splurge on the shoes and the belt.
Right.
You know? If you're spending this much, and if it's the best property, not just in sports, but in all of entertainment, then you want Al Michaels. Then you want Joe Buck. Now, to put it another way, and I'm going to use some names and apologize. Let's say right now, Mike Breen is the top NBA guy nationally.
Right.
He's great, right? He's the successor to Marv Albert. He's the top guy. Where does he has no comparable leverage to that. I'm sure Mike is making a fine living, and we won't have to throw a benefit for him. But there's no comparable thing. There's no five entities investing that kind of money and looking for a relatively small talent pool to find top guys. If Doc Emrick was still active, proclaimed the greatest hockey announcer maybe ever, everybody loves Doc. Again, well compensated, but where's he going to go? Where's the leverage? There's only one or two entities that carry hockey at any kind of level. So football is completely unique when we talk about this game of musical chairs and the amount of money that's involved.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Bob, before we let you go, overtime rule change in the NFL, something that was necessary or an overreaction to Chiefs-Bills?
Oh, it was completely necessary. And Chiefs-Bills, people react to that. They're not being logical. They're not seeing the big picture. It was evident, and I've been talking about this for years and years on NBC and then on HBO. It wasn't just Chiefs-Bills, although that was an extreme example. But it happened twice to Aaron Rodgers in the playoffs, lose the flip, never touch the ball. It happened to Matt Ryan in the Super Bowl the year he was the MVP. It happened to Patrick Mahomes in the AFC Championship game against Brady and the Patriots. It happened to Drew Brees on another occasion. It's ridiculously unfair on its face. Here you have a league that will measure to within a millimeter for a first down. They'll look at five or six different angles on a game between the Jets and the Jaguars in October, just to, quote, you know, get it right. But then they'll let the most important games, including the Super Bowl, be so unduly influenced by something as random as a flip of a coin. It's idiotic. Okay, so now they come halfway toward where they should be. They don't correct it for the regular season, and some of those games do, after all, affect the playoffs, who gets in or what the seedings is are. But, okay, they change it for the playoffs. It's better than what it was. It's a lot better than what it was because each team gets to touch it twice, once rather. And there's a strategic aspect. If you win the flip, I guess you want to kick because then you know you only need a field goal if you hold them. Or if they kick a field goal, you win with a touchdown. And you know you need a touch. You know what you need to do, and what the possibilities are. But still, let's say neither team scores. There's an exchange of punts. Then, as on an ongoing basis, since they then go to sudden death, it's an unfair advantage for the team that got the ball first. What they should have done, especially in the postseason, was just play a timed period, because the way overtime is now, one of the essential elements of football, clock management, the race against time, an essential part of strategy, but also of the drama and theater of the sport, is completely eliminated. So you don't have to play 15 minutes. Maybe you play a 10-minute timed period. But then it has all the true dynamics, including the drama, of football. These things are so obvious, I have no idea why it takes people who are paid to think about it so long to reach proper conclusions.
Now, the only reason I thought, Bob, because you're a TV guy, is the timed quarter in overtime, are they afraid, like in the championship weekend, the 3 o'clock game would spill too much into the 6:30 second game doubleheader?
I think they're afraid of that during the regular season, which makes some sense. But during the postseason, the ratings are building and building, and if that ever happens, they'll have to live with it. And how would you explain it in the post in the Super Bowl? You know, it would only enhance the drama, and the audience would only build and build. Now, since you've got me started on this, how much more of your time do you want me to take?
Bob, the floor is yours. I want to debate you on the overtime thing, but I just didn't think you had the time.
I got nothing but time for you guys. I don't know about the audience.
No, the audience is loving this.
Yeah.
But what were you going to say? I'm sorry, Bob.
Well, baseball, okay? Yes. You mentioned the wild card of baseball. The problem with the wild card initially was that it reduced the meaning and potentially the drama of what used to be called pennant races. And it actually played out that way, where there were a couple of situations where the teams that were neck and neck for first place met on the final weekend of the season. Happened with the Astros and the Cardinals when the Astros were in the National League. It happened with the Padres and the Dodgers and maybe a few other times. And literally, teams played it like a spring training game because at that point it didn't matter that much whether you finished first or whether you were a wild card. There was no significant advantage, and teams would rather have gotten their pitching in order. By adding the second wild card, at least you made a significant distinction between being first and being a wild card, because nobody wants to subject themselves to that one-game knockout. Now, they expand the playoffs, and the reasons for that are obvious. Chance for more revenue, keep more teams and their fan bases involved, partially addresses the idea of tanking, because if you can get in the playoffs being barely over 500, maybe you'll make a push and you won't cut payroll. We get all that. Okay. But here's their format. The first two division winners get a bye into the divisional round, which they always had previously. But the third best division winner has to get thrown in with the three wild cards. In 2019, all three American League division winners won more than 100 games. Mm. And every baseball fan knows that during the course of the season, because of the nature of baseball, a team that would win 100 games could lose 2 out of 3 at home to a team that will lose 100 games, and no one even raises an eyebrow. It's the nature of baseball. Now, if that happens in a crapshoot wild card round or a one-off knockout game, that's okay because you didn't win the division. That's the disadvantage you're at for being a wild card. You snuck in through the back door. So how should they handle this? The three division winners, no matter their records, their division winners, should all automatically get a bye. And now you have three wild cards. Think of the Dodgers a year ago. They were a wild card, even though they won 106 games. Why should they be in the same boat as the second and third wild card? Here's what you do. You have the second and third wild cards, by definition, the fifth and sixth playoff qualifiers. They play the one-game knockout, which has been the format for the last decade, and fans love it. Television loves it. It's an elimination game. It has drama. The survivor of that then goes to the home field of the best wild card for the best 2 out of 3. Now, it's still a crapshoot for a very good team, the wild card team. Top wild card could be the second best team in the league, but that's the penalty for not making it for not winning your division. And then whoever survives out of those three teams obviously joins the three division winners in the divisional round. But now you let the best division winner pick which team it wants to play. For example, last year the Giants never would have picked the Dodgers.
No.
They would have picked one of the other division winners. By doing that, you add a level of strategy, but you also add varying levels of advantages and disadvantages based on what you did during the regular season. So instead of doing what they've done now, which is to further diminish the meaning of the regular season, what I just described at some length, and I apologize, but what I just described is a way to simultaneously enhance the meaning of the regular season while expanding the playoffs. and adding new wrinkles to the postseason. Now, I'm not Einstein, but I thought of that in 10 minutes and then took 20 minutes to explain it. But the people who are paid to think about it can't think about it.
Another example why you should be the commissioner of Major League Baseball.
Oh, yeah, well, as someone once famously said about a more important position, if nominated, I will not run. If elected, I will not serve.
And promise me you'll come on another time so we can debate the NFL overtime, okay?
Yeah, and by the way, a healthy Mickey Mantle would be great today. We'll take that up with you again, Don. Would be great today. I don't know about Babe Ruth, just watching him through those grainy black and white film.
Yeah, because Walter Johnson, let's face it, Walter Johnson by inning 350 was throwing meatballs. Let's be honest.
Oh, no, there's no question about it. But here's the answer to the Mantle thing. At his best, and the difference between Mantle and Mays and Aaron is that Mickey did it for 10 or 12 years, and they did it for 20 years, and that's why they're greater in all-time rankings. But at his best, Mantle was quite comparable and in some ways, in some seasons, better than either Mays or Aaron. And nobody in their right mind thinks Mays or Aaron would not be great today. So Mantle at his best, whatever his deficiencies were, the injuries or didn't take care of himself, whatever it was, what he was good enough for a sustained period of time to be comparable to Mays and Aaron. So therefore, all three of them would excel today.
Bob, love you, man.
Yeah, you are the you are the absolute best. Bob, my last five-word question, if you find out in an hour that Tiger's playing in the Masters, will it affect you next weekend, or are your plans the same either way?
No, you got to watch it. He's compelling. I'd watch it.
There you go, Don. See? Bob, thank you so much. It's always an honor to have you on.
All right, take care, guys. See ya.
There he is, the iconic Bob Costas. Well, Don, we'll break that down. We'll take phone calls at 1-800-919-3776. And get ready for ENN coming up at 6 right here on The K Show on YES and 98.7.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.